This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Let's hit it. Give me a vacation.
Vacation.
Give me a wave.
Surfing.
Give me a city tour.
The trolley.
Give me animals.
The zoo.
Give me some sea life. Give me museums.
Balboa Park.
Give me a woo.
Roller coaster.
What's that spell?
San Diego.
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your family vacation at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hello and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we have an episode for you about condensed and evaporated milk.
Yes, and it's a doozy, as
Oof-ta.
They say. Yes.
Oof-ta.
Yeah. A lot of threads. A lot of stuff to sort out. We made the mistake where we thought it would be condensed.
Hey, it's the holidays. Like, what are some foods that you work with around the holidays? Maybe condensed, like sweetened condensed milk. And then, it was only, we didn't have canning until like the mid 1800s. So
right.
Clearly the amount of information about canned milk can't be that much information. Forgetting that the first word was not as operative as the second word, and the second word is milk. And everything about the production of milk is nut bar.
Yeah. Yes. Scientific term for it. very, very, very complicated. Oh my gosh. I will say, I don't have too much experience with condensed milk, actually.
Yeah.
But I did just have the pleasure of hanging out with one of my best friends. And she's somebody who gets these ideas in her head, and she's going to make it happen. And this is the time of shortages. So she was having trouble finding condensed milk and a pie crust, because she wanted to make a pumpkin pie. We had to have a pumpkin pie. Mm-hmm. So we went on this journey of the grocery stores. Eventually, we found a pie crust and some condensed milk, and we made it happen, and it was so good.
Oh,
and,
yay.
Yeah, she, showed up with all the makings for it, and once again, we played Last of Us 2, and I cried into my pie, which is just, I guess, a thing now, because this is my second time doing that, so.
All right. No, I like it. I mean, as far as things go, that one sounds pretty good.
Yeah, it was good. There's a video of me sobbing into my favorite stuffed animal, my bee.
Yeah.
Just sobbing away with some pie.
With pie.
Yeah. I did not know this video was being recorded, but I understand why.
Well, would you... I'm so serious. Would you please send that to my aura frame?
Yes, but only because I love you, Lauren.
Oh no. That wasn't like a I'm not sure what day it is. They might still be a paid sponsor. That wasn't a plug, but y'all, we genuinely are enjoying those heckin' digital frames so much. They're so goofy and fun. Anyway, back to pie. I also had an undeniable craving for pumpkin pie, and specifically like a pumpkin pie that I make myself a few weeks back. And I didn't think that I had any sweetened condensed milk. I did have a can of pumpkin. I did have a pie crust. And so I just went like, okay, well, like, how can we make this happen? And I wound up making this like accidental vegan pumpkin pie because I had like a can of coconut milk. And so I sort of made it work. Then I found a can of sweetened condensed milk. It was in the baking shelf, not the cooking shelf. Yeah. The pie turned out really good, though.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. I also didn't have real eggs. I only had one of those bottles of, like, mung bean concentrate that works like scrambled eggs, which I actually really like. Also not a sponsor. Just egg. I really like it, y'all. So that craving has been sated. But now doing this research, I have an upsettingly intense craving for like Vietnamese style iced coffee right now.
Ooh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. And that or like maybe some like Thai iced tea.
Yes.
So both delicious. Of which, because I don't consume that much sugar, y'all. And so every time I do order one of those things, I like turn to whoever I'm there with. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. You're going to have to deal with me after I drink this.
Yep.
So good, though.
It is. It is.
For more on the intricacies of the milk industry, you can see our episode on types of milk. I didn't look up when we did that. I think it was 20 years ago. I'm not sure.
I think it must have been. I would add on also our we talked a lot about milk in our expiration dates.
Oh, episode. Right. Because of Al Capone.
Because of Al Capone, of course.
Yeah.
It's true, but it does sound weird. Okay, but I guess this brings us to our question.
I suppose
condensed and evaporated milk, what are they?
Well, condensed and evaporated milks are milks that have been preserved by being condensed or evaporated. Concentrated? Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is done by removing some of the water content from it. Condensed milk is usually further preserved by adding sugars and is thus often labeled as sweetened condensed milk to, you know, avoid confusion. The thing is that microbes that make milk spoil generally need water to live. And also don't do all that well around sugar because sugar gloms on to water, making what little is left even less available. Also, sugar can like straight up mess with microbes, enzymes, and DNA and stuff. So, condensed milk is like sweeter, milkier milk. Thicker, a little sticky, good for use in recipes where you want to add creaminess without adding very much water. And you also want to add sweetness. Sold in cans or tubes or pouches, it can remain shelf stable for years and can also be like reconstituted by adding water, maybe for applications like in coffee or tea or, again, cooking where you want both creaminess and sweetness. And note that this, yes, is a slightly different product than evaporated milk, sometimes called non-sweetened condensed milk, which is not sweetened. But okay, so condensed milk, generally made from cow milk and like plain old sugar. Though now there are vegan varieties with coconut milk or other plant-based milks, or like fancy ones made with maple sugar. I saw that. Ooh. And now I really want to buy a can. condensed milk, both of these types, are made with a process called vacuum evaporation, in which you seal a liquid in a container and then lower the pressure in that container. And that's because at very low pressures, the boiling point of water also lowers. So in a vacuum chamber, you can get milk to boil at like 40 to 45 degrees Celsius. That's like 104 to 113 Fahrenheit. So you do that. Some of the water boils off as steam and is collected, leaving you with milk that is concentrated with all the original solids, but only like 40% of the original water content. And the cool thing about this is, pun, cool, blah, 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 is that you haven't cooked it. Because if you boiled the water out of milk at normal air pressure, you would be heating some of the fats and proteins to make them taste different. Milk condensed with vacuum evaporation doesn't taste cooked. And for condensed milk, as a preservation and flavoring agent, you then add sugar, sometimes in the form of lactose, which is milk sugar, sometimes in the form of sucrose. It's shelf-stable for like 2 years. That's Dang. A lot longer than fresh milk. Yes. You couldn't leave fresh milk out in your cupboard for 2 years. Yes. Or, I mean, could, but I wouldn't recommend drinking it afterwards.
No. That brings to mind two things. One, again, back when we had the video series, we did that video with Joe McCormick. So this was pre our video series and back when Kristen Conger and Ben Boland were doing food stuff.
You know,
Joe came on. And he did the ghost pepper. He tried a ghost pepper. And then he was at his in-law's house, I think.
Uh-huh.
And they gave him milk when it was clear he was in
suffering.
Pain.
Yeah.
And the milk was spoiled.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't good all around. Not good. But the other being, we were discussing before, I actually used to love milk and I would drink milk all the time. I still really like milk. But I gave it up. Because I'm a single person living by myself and I just can't drink that much milk before it goes bad.
Even like the small containers of fresh milk are large, right? For a single human person, if you're not just downing whole glasses of milk like a Jordan Peele villain. Like,
right. Yes. So it's pretty rare these days for me.
Goodness. All right. So don't do that, or do, and report back on the results. I'm sure that you could make an interesting cheese that way. Not telling you to do it, not telling you not to. Anyway, evaporated milk, because you are not adding sugar in, has to be sterilized. So prior to that vacuum evaporation process, it's going to be pasteurized, which means exposing it very briefly to very high heat that kills off any bacteria or other microbes that might be in it. Then again, because you're not adding sugar, some other stabilizer like a salt of some kind, like a potassium phosphate, will usually be added. This is also why evaporated milk is usually like pale tan in color, as opposed to like the creamy white that you get with condensed milk. Evaporated milk has a little bit less shelf stability time, maybe like 15 months instead of 2 years. And I will say that these days, sweetened condensed milk is also usually pasteurized first, because that's just like a thing that we really like doing to milk now.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. See above re our types of milk episode and expiration dates. Right.
Yes. Yes.
Condensed milk shows up in recipes for, custardy pies like pumpkin or key lime, in dense candies like fudge or caramel, and custardy frozen desserts like ice cream, all of which it helps, stabilize. And the stabilization here is for two reasons. First, dairy can be tricky. The fat parts and the water parts in dairy are joined in an emulsion, but they can separate out or de-emulsify at real awkward times, like when you add something acidic, like lime juice, to make your delicious key lime pie, or when you freeze it, because those different fats and water parts freeze at different temperatures, right? Sugar can also be tricky because once you've got it in its crystal form, you know, like your normal old bag of table sugar, it really wants to stay in crystal form. So when you start melting it to make a candy like a fudge or a caramel, just a single errant crystal can make a whole pan of syrup recrystallize.
Wow.
Yeah. Ooh, scary. And it's also furthermore not easy to incorporate crystals of sugar into cold things because that cold crystal of sugar interacts with that cold thing and it's like, all right, well, we're just chilling. Literally. This is the second time I've done this episode. I'm so sorry. I keep not meaning to. Yeah, but, you know, you've seen this if you've ever been served a glass of unsweetened iced tea and tried to add a packet of sugar to it.
Mm-hmm.
What you get is grains of sugar in the bottom of a glass of iced tea.
Which, as a kid, I would just spoon it up, eat it.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. No, I mean, like, you can just do that, but right, it might not be the intent.
What you want, right.
So condensed milk, which is this emulsion of fats and water stabilized by liquid sugar, fixes both of those problems. This is why it is used in the aforementioned Vietnamese-style iced coffee, a Thai iced tea. I mean, it's used in Vietnamese-style hot coffee because it's delicious, but it's also one of the milks used to soak tres leches cake. Along with fresh milk and or cream and unsweetened evaporated milk. Yeah. It's terrific as a topping or a mix-in with shaved ice desserts. One of my favorite things, yeah. Also an easy starter for dulce de leche, like caramel sauce, because you can just cook it down in a pan to caramelize and thicken it, or you can take the whole can and just boil it for a few hours as long as you keep it covered in water.
Whoa.
Yeah. No, I feel like a wizard every time I do this. It's amazing.
Wow.
Note, do make sure that you keep the can covered in water. Because if you do not, the pressure differential will make the can explode.
Terrifying.
Yes.
Cooking is such a terrifying venture half the time.
It is. I love it. It's so
I love
scary.
It too. Oh, yes.
Evaporated milk, meanwhile, is about the consistency of half and half, less sticky, you know, because it doesn't have sugar in it. Weird. And is often used in circumstances where fresh dairy is unavailable, reconstituted with water, or in recipes where, you want dairy without watering things down too much. Or without adding as much fat as you would with another dense dairy product like cream.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what about the nutrition?
Sweetened condensed milk tends to be a densely caloric food. Lots of sugars, varying fat levels. You can usually get it with non-fat skim or whole milk. Varieties. So you know, that'll depend. Evaporated milk doesn't have as much sugar. Good substitute for regular milk. Both do have fats, except for the aforementioned non-fat condensed milk, and protein and a smattering of vitamins and minerals. So, you know, it kind of depends.
Kind of depends. Well, we do have some numbers for you.
We do. Okay. The global market for sweetened condensed milk was worth as much as $9.9 billion as of 2019 and was expected to be growing over the next 7 years.
Wow.
And I'm pretty sure that's a separate number from evaporated milk because I saw a different specified report that the global market for evaporated milk was $5.7 billion and growing.
Wow.
A lot of canned milk out there, yeah.
Yeah.
Nestle produces the most, some 17%, which, oh gosh, just thinking about global supply chains, that is a wild amount.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Weird. I'm telling you, I cannot get any dairy products right now at my local store.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Weird.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's see. And then the biggest global producers country-wise of condensed milk as of 2014 anyway were Malaysia, Singapore, and Moldova, followed by the U.S. But because we do have a large dairy industry, but less than 2% of the milk in the United States is evaporated or canned today.
Huh. Well, that is interesting because in its history, it was extremely, extremely popular.
Oh yeah. Yes. I don't think I realized.
Yes. And we're going to get into that. But first, we're going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
We've talked in a bunch of different episodes about facets of Puerto Rican cuisine, like the dish mofongo, made of savory, deep-fried mashed plantains studded with some kind of tasty protein, and the creation of the cool, creamy piña colada. But there is so much more there. I've actually never been. You have a tiny bit of experience, don't you?
Yes. Unfortunately, it was a very tiny bit of experience. I was there for about a day. I'm kicking myself for that now. I remember having delicious rums, delicious drinks. But I want to go back because, yeah, so many episodes we do on here, when we're talking about food from Puerto Rico, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds amazing. We're trying to get a savor team trip
together. Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, we're trying to get a trip to a lot of places, but this is really top of the list. Even putting together this ad read made me hungry. I was like, oh, I want to try those things. Yeah, as we've talked about before, there are influences there from African and Spanish and native Taino foodways. The culinary scene sounds amazing, and we want to go, and I'm hungry. No passport too. Is required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. You can learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
Back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
So, as we mentioned, while liquid canned condensed milk is relatively recent, the roots of it date back thousands of years to places like India, where there are records of milk sweets that are people think this might be where it started.
Yeah. Like, as we've talked about in our episodes about cheeses and yogurt, for example, right, people have been trying to preserve milk ever since we've been, you know, collecting milk. But for thousands of years, fermentation was probably the main preservation method there, followed by boiling down milk and adding some kind of sugar. The first modern record we have, though, for a similar product to sweetened condensed milk is, as far as I know, a patent from England from 1810 for this method of heating milk and sugar together to preserve the mixture, the holder of which patent did nothing with it.
He's like, okay. Cool.
Which was very confusing in the record because future patents refer to it and are like, I'm not doing that. That's not what I'm doing. I'm doing something different.
Doing my own thing.
But this guy never did anything with it. I'm like, what were you doing, guy? Anyway, around the same time, around the late 17, early 1800s, Frenchman Nicolas Appert was developing canning technology. We've mentioned him and this in a few episodes. Napoleon had put out this reward for anyone who could help preserve foods for his armies. And milk was one of the foods that Appert was working with canning. He would cook it down and bottle it. And it would have tasted like that's exactly what he did. Like,
right.
it would have tasted like cooked milk. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The vacuum pan was patented in England for the first time in 1813.
Yes. And cans of sweetened condensed milk were introduced in the United States in the 1850s. It was the invention of Gale Borden Jr., who was born in 1801. And early on, he developed an interest in creating products to sustain soldiers, sailors, and people who were settling in America. To that end, condensed milk wasn't the only food product Borden invented. One he was particularly proud of was a, quote, complete nutrition bar he called a meat biscuit.
Or possibly a soup bread?
Ooh.
I saw both. But yeah, it was like a flour and dried meat kind of cooked into these protein bars.
Yes, and he really put a lot of time and effort into it. It took 6 years and $60,000 for him to come up with it. But despite positive reviews from army officials and winning an award at London's Great Exposition in 1851, the product never really took off because of how it looked and complaints about the taste. Drats. This left Borden in a lot of debt, but he was not finished. And just to say, Borden wore a lot of hats and had a lot of interest. He spent time working as a surveyor in Texas. He spent time in politics. According to a radio story on NPR, he was also interested in food packaging after hearing about the Donner Party. And I think this NPR story...
What?
Yeah, they called him, like, the father of modern packaging because he heard this and was like, no.
Never again.
That should never have happened.
Wow.
But yeah, the meat biscuit was a part of this whole thing. But okay, Borden was inspired to start experimenting with sterilized milk after a series of stories ran in the U.S. on, quote, swill milk, revealing that a lot of the milk for sale in cities was actually molasses, chalk powder, and vermin. Oof. Yeah. The press wrote, quote, he is reported to have committed himself to finding a safe milk product after witnessing several children die aboard ship after drinking contaminated milk.
Now, I've seen a few different versions of this story, but and I'm not sure which is correct. I don't know if anyone at this juncture in time is sure which is correct. But but the story goes that Borden was coming back from this great exhibition in London where he had won this award for his meat soup bread biscuit. So he was heading back in 1852, and there were cows on board the ship that were dairy cows that were there for milk production. But the sea got rough for a period, and the cows stopped producing milk. And infants on board were going hungry. And maybe one or more died. I'm not sure.
Yeah. But it seems there was a concern about preserving milk, making it safe.
Won't someone think of the children? Yes.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Absolutely.
Essentially. So Borden opened the first commercial milk condensery in Wolcottville, Connecticut, now Torrington, Connecticut. He first applied for a patent for concentration and preservation of milk in 1853, but his request was denied for lack of usefulness and, quote, lack of novelty.
See this earlier 1810 patent?
Yeah.
Like, I think he was a little defensive about it later. But anyway, please keep going.
Yes, yes. Lack of novelty. Patent burn. So using partial vacuum pressure and heat, Borden was able to create one tough milk product with a shelf life of several years, and he was awarded the patent for, quote, improvement in concentration of milk in 1856. According to some sources, the idea to use a vacuum evaporator to preserve the milk came from how the shakers preserve fruit. Like, he went out and kind of talked to them and witnessed this and was like, huh. Yeah, that's how it was reported. I really couldn't find anything beyond that, though.
Yeah, I read that, too. In this patent, he wrote, like blood, milk is a living fluid. And as soon as drawn from the cow begins to die, change, and decompose, in no other process for concentrating milk with which I am acquainted has any adequate means been adopted to prevent incipient decomposition of the milk and render it preservable and soluble.
Wow. That's some dark milk.
Blood milk is a living fluid. I love this.
Begins to die, change, and decompose. He's not wrong, but that's pretty intense.
I mean, he's like a little bit wrong. Like, blood and milk. Blood.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. There are living cells in blood, and there can be living cells in milk, but in blood, you want to keep them alive, and in milk, you don't.
Right.
So, anyway, this patent was actually for unsweetened milk, though. It does explain that the milk is rendered sweeter than fresh milk due to the evaporation process, but that no sugar needs to be added. However, and I spent like 4 hours tracking the specificities of this down last night, when he got going, he was making sweetened condensed milk. The patent is not for sweetened milk. What he was making wound up being sweetened milk. I suspect because pasteurization wasn't on the scene yet, and it helped preserve it. Also, people like sugar.
Oh, yes, they do.
Anyway, if you need to know what was driving Lauren Vogelbaum completely wild at like 11 p.m. last night, this is it.
Sweetened condensed milk. The cost of the patent meant that Borden had to seek out financial partners in order to start producing this product. However, the factory wasn't very successful at first and was shut down in that first year. Borden didn't give up, though, and opened a second factory nearby in 1857, but it also failed. Still, Borden was determined and found a new investor out of New York named Jeremiah Milbank. Milbank? Milbank? Sorry, I don't know why I said it that way. Why was that my natural inclination?
I guess that would be like that. That's like a French enunciation, right? Like bonk.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Sure. Well, Jeremiah Milbank or Milbank is the investor. I hope it's one of those.
supposedly, these two met another travel story on a train. When Borden was traveling to or from D.C. to apply for this patent for his condensed milk.
Yes, and together they founded the New York Condensed Milk Company. This was also confusing. The company changed their names a few times over the years, eventually arriving at the name The Borden Company in 1919.
In honor of Borden, yes. But right, they opened their first production plant in 1864.
And some of their first orders were from the U.S. government. They used condensed milk to feed Union soldiers during the Civil War. There are a lot of big headlines like, sweetened condensed milk helps the Union win the Civil War. Mm-hmm. By this time, it was sold under the name Eagle Brand, and the logo had a patriotic eagle on it. Eagle Brand condensed milk became a household name, and yes, still can find it.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, during the Civil War, it was a very, very big, serious part of the war effort. Just one of their plants was producing 300,000 gallons of condensed milk a year during the height of the war.
Oof.
Mm-hmm.
The formula and process changed a bit, evaporating most of the water from the milk, adding some sugar, and then canning the result. The advertising for condensed milk, it really leaned heavily into this, the safety aspect. Mm-hmm. Which was a huge deal and something we have discussed. Borden reportedly had a checklist called the Dairyman's Ten Commandments for Farmers in the interest of safety. And I read some funny stories where the farmers were like, I don't appreciate this. But then later, yeah, that was pretty good. It was a good idea. He was pretty intense about it. The product was also, yes, shelf stable. It didn't require refrigeration and thus could be shipped more easily across the country.
Which was great because refrigeration, as we've talked about in our ice episode and maybe somewhere else, maybe a few other places, was not very commercially viable yet.
Yes. So seeing the success of Borden's product, Charles Page, an American consul in Zurich, founded the Anglo-Swiss Condensed Milk Company in 1866 with his brother George in the U.S. learning about Borden's manufacturing process. I'm sure the use of the word learning could be contested, mm-hmm. but yes. Though the product was ultimately intended for England, it was manufactured in Switzerland where milk was plentiful. They opened a plant in New York in 1881 and started to directly compete with Borden with their Milkmaid brand. One of their advertisements read, "Ours is the original condensed Swiss milk and the best. Every other kind is inferior."
Ooh,
I know. Later, this, of course, became Nestle's Milkmaid when Anglo-Swiss merged with Nestle in 1905. And that's a whole thing. And that's a different story. But.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, no, that's a huge story. Nestle, the Nestle brand had also started production of condensed milk a little bit earlier in like 1878 or so.
According to Nestle's website, by 1868, Anglo-Swiss was selling 374,000 cartons of condensed milk to the UK and its colonies, and that by 1891, they had 12 factories around the world. The first Canadian condenser opened in 1871.
And meanwhile, Louis Pasteur had developed pasteurization in 1864 to make wines stay fresher longer. And then, a little bit later, after pasteurization, one of Anglo-Swiss's employees, a guy by the name of John Baptist Mayenberg, suggested that unsweetened condensed milk would be, like, more useful to more people. They did not take him up on it. So he left the company, moved to the United States, and started up the Helvetia Milk Condensing Company with some local dairy farmers. He received a patent for sterilizing milk, cutting the need to add sugar in 1884, and they became the first commercial producer of unsweetened evaporated milk in 1885. Simultaneously, a grocer in Texas by the name of Eldridge Amos Stewart was developing a similar process. Upon finding that Mayenberg held the patent, though, the two teamed up to form the Carnation Company. And then they set up in Washington State to sell evaporated milk to gold prospectors heading up north to the Klondike.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Scientific advancements in food processing in the early 1900s allowed for a more dependable product across the board, like homogenization. In which milk is agitated or pressurized so that the fat molecules break into smaller pieces and so that it stays emulsified, right? Like the cream doesn't separate out and it's therefore like smoother tasting, yeah? Canned milk incorporated homogenization like a couple decades earlier than fresh milk, as early as 1909, though most fresh milk is homogenized today.
And one of the interesting things I found about this topic is that condensed milk, you could just find articles for how did it get popular in this place or how did it get popular in this place.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love for listeners to write in about your experiences with it
because there
were these pockets of popularity around the world where it just really took hold. During periods of turmoil or poverty, it was a safe product that people could often get their hands on.
Yeah. American production of evaporated milk more than doubled to feed soldiers during World War I from like 1914 to 1918.
And cans of Nestle condensed milk were introduced in Brazil in 1921, which is one of the places I hear is very popular.
Used to make I don't have the word in front of me and I'm forgetting it, but a candy that's like a little bit like fudge. And it's named after, it's named after this brigadier.
Oh,
my Portuguese is not. So anyway, cool. Meanwhile, fortification of milk with vitamin D
was developed in the 1920s. Researchers figured out that if you irradiated milk with ultraviolet light, and irradiated sounds like a scary word. It's not. It just means that you expose it to radiation. Radiation isn't always bad. Ultraviolet light, in this case, causes chemical reactions in the milk that produce vitamin D. Cool. This was being used in fresh milk by 1932, and Carnation was the first to incorporate the technology in their evaporated milk in 1934.
Condensed milk was airlifted into Berlin during World War II.
And evaporated milk was a big part of the war effort everywhere.
Yes. And here's one I wasn't expecting to find this. But after World War II, condensed milk became a highly sought after product during shortages in the USSR, going on to become an ingredient in many Soviet desserts. An online archive of sources called 17 Moments in Soviet History contains a letter from a prisoner released from the Gulag in 1954 that makes mention of condensed milk. Quote, there are a lot of canned foods in the world, meat, fish, fruit, vegetables, but best of all was condensed milk. Of course, there was no sense drinking it with hot water. You had to eat it with a spoon, smear it on bread, or swallow it slowly from the can, eat it little by little, watching how the light liquid mass grew yellow and how a small sugar star would stick to the can. Tomorrow, I said, choking from joy, condensed milk. I fell asleep and in my ragged, hungry dreams saw Shestakov's can of condensed milk, a monstrous can with the sky blue label. Enormous and blue as the night sky, the can had 1,000 holes punched in it, and the milk seeped out and flowed in a stream as broad as the Milky Way. My hands easily reached the sky, and greedily I drank the thick, sweet, starry milk.
Wow.
I know. It goes on. That was just a segment. Yeah. Very popular.
Oof. I mean, yeah, I get it. I mean, it's delicious, and especially right, like in a time when you have so few treats,
right?
Like you have so little of anything, but especially something that's right, like genuinely pleasurable.
Right. Yeah. Stepping back a bit to 1931, Eagle Brand offered $25 for original recipes from customers, quote, in which Eagle Brand sweetened condensed milk makes cooking quicker, easier, and surer. Over 80,000 people submitted.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Elsie the Borden Cow debuted in 1938.
By 1956, evaporated milk was the most sold canned food product in the United States, with enough cans being sold that it's estimated that an average of 5,000 were being used every minute.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Carnation brand was family run by the Stewarts until 1985, which is when Nestle bought them out for $3 billion.
Oh.
At the time, it was the largest merger of like a non-oil business in history.
Wow.
By that time, it wasn't just the evaporated and condensed milks. Carnation was also making a lot of related products like Coffee Mate and Instant Breakfast. Also unrelated products like tomato paste and Friskies cat food. Yeah.
Okay. Eagle Brand started offering low-fat and fat-free options in 1994 and 1995, respectively, I believe. A lot of other brands followed suit. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was after some amount of kerfuffle. It had been whole milk based. Condensed milk had been based in whole milk for decades after, I think, this like outbreak of rickets in maybe the 1920s really got the industry going like, you cannot use skim or fat free milk in your condensed milk. Won't you think of the children?
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, crap, you're right. So
that seems to be a theme. Mm-hmm. Seems to be a theme in this one.
Oh, absolutely. And that's it's so fascinating. It's so fascinating and so infuriating doing research like this.
Yes. Very complicated for us mere food podcasters.
Mere mortals.
Yes, but very, very, very interesting. Mm-hmm. I did enjoy learning about all of this, as complex as it was.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, because that is about what we have to say about evaporated and condensed milks today.
Yes. But we do have some listener mail for you.
And we are going to get into that after we get back from a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico. We've talked in a bunch of different episodes about facets of Puerto Rican cuisine, like the dish mofongo, made of savory, deep-fried mashed plantains studded with some kind of tasty protein, and the creation of the cool, creamy piña colada. But there is so much more there. I've actually never been. You have a tiny bit of experience, don't you?
Yes. Unfortunately, it was a very tiny bit of experience. I was there for about a day. I'm kicking myself for that now. I remember having delicious rums, delicious drinks. But I want to go back because, yeah, so many episodes we do on here, when we're talking about food from Puerto Rico, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds amazing. We're trying to get a savor team trip
together. Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, we're trying to get a trip to a lot of places, but this is really top of the list. Even putting together this ad read made me hungry. I was like, oh, I want to try those things. Yeah, as we've talked about before, there are influences there from African and Spanish and native Taino foodways. The culinary scene sounds amazing, and we want to go, and I'm hungry. No passport is required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. You can learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with listener mail.
Sweet.
So today we have two letters from Sheldon. Thank you, Sheldon, for writing.
Yeah.
Sheldon wrote, yes. The first letter is about poutine and cheese curds specifically.
Okay. So
Sheldon wrote, this argument comes up in my family from time to time. My daughter-in-law is from Wisconsin and I have a Wisconsin Cheesehead t-shirt. I've seen both sides. I've been to Wisconsin and I've had cheese curds and deep fried cheese curds. They're different. I wouldn't say that Canada is noted for cheese curds. It's much more regional. They're extremely popular here in Quebec, home of the poutine, and more eastern parts of Ontario, much less so in the rest of the country. They are made by smallish fromageries, don't know the English word for that, cheese factory, doesn't sound right. Around my area, I can get cheese curds from three different fromageries, the Trappa Fromage, St. Albert, site of the Curd Festival each August, and Forfar. They all have a different and distinct taste. It's quite easy to tell which is which in a blind taste test. Huh. The different tastes come from their unique home bacteria, much like some breweries have their home yeast for brewing beer. And thanks for the reminder, the border will be somewhat open next week, and I'm going down for a belated U.S. Thanksgiving to see my sister and brother. You reminded me to bring them some fresh cheese curds. How fresh, you may ask? I'll be picking some up at the fromagerie on my way down. They will have been made that morning. I like to tell my sister that they are so fresh that they were in the cow the day before. Oh,
that sounds so delightful.
It does. It does. I do love cheese curds. I do.
Yeah. Oh, no.
I like how you can pick out the different, you can tell where they come from. That's interesting.
I want to be able to do that with local cheeses. Heck.
Yes.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah. Cheesemaker. Cheesemaker, I think, is the English equivalent of fromagerie.
Yeah, I don't know. But this is something we should know. Cheese is very important to us.
Yeah, we don't have... Yeah, ours doesn't sound as cool in English, which is frequently the case of English versus French.
Yeah.
But yeah. Okay, so Sheldon followed up with this note on the pronunciation of poutine. I'm in Quebec, where it is pronounced the way the word is, but others pronounce it differently. It's often like this with languages. There's a singer from Quebec whose name is similarly pronounced wrong. When she was born, Madame Dion pronounced her daughter's name Céline. Kids in school pronounced it Céline. Everyone around pronounced it Céline. But when she got popular in English Canada and the States, everyone pronounced her name Céline. See the similarity? Céline, Céline, and Poutine, Poutine. That's how things are when they go from one language to another. How do you pronounce that city in France that's the home of the Eiffel Tower?
Well,
oh, no.
I love this so much. That's a great, like, I like
that's
the
a great,
similarities.
Like, mnemonic device, too, for remembering what it is. Yeah, and absolutely, like, in English, we say Paris.
Yep. I mean, it's Tour Eiffel. This is not Eiffel Tower either.
Oh, yeah. Eiffel Tower. Yeah, that's not.
Yeah. So I did appreciate this note because I was like, yes, yes. It is true. It's a great point.
Yeah. I had no idea about Céline Dion. That's why.
Now every time you say it, you're going to kind of wonder, kind of stumble, which one should I go with?
I will. This is going to change not a whole lot of my discourse, to be honest, but...
You don't talk about Céline Dion a lot?
Not extremely often.
Oh, well.
Sorry. I'm sorry, Céline.
Sorry from all of
I'm
us.
Sorry.
Yes, and also welcome and thank you.
Yes.
Yes. And thank you to Sheldon for sending us these messages.
Yes.
If you would like to email us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @SaverPod. And we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.
This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.